The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Squawker Talker is brought to you by Betball, the social sports betting app and home of the Squawker Accumulator. Download the app at squawk.app/betball and challenge Squawker, join our accumulator, or make your own, or follow the link in the podcast description. This week, I'm joined by Jamie Hinks of Betball. Back again. How are you doing?
Very good, thanks, Greg. How are you?
Yeah, not bad. Good final weekend of the season for you?
Yeah, like a load of bets came in. Like Palace didn't turn up at all. But, apart from that, yeah. It's good.
Were you relying on them at all?
No.
Oh, well, that's
never bet on them. Never bet on your own team.
Wise words there. And George Ellick is back on the Squawker Talker podcast. It's been a while, hasn't it?
I know, Greg. Good to be back.
Good to have you back.
Happy to be here.
How was your final weekend of the season?
Well, okay, it's pretty good to see all the goals going in, basically, but except for that, it was all pretty predictable. I think there's something to be said about league formats and final days being a bit of an anti-climax in seasons like this.
Ooh, well, may I get onto that? Slightly later on in the podcast. But talk about what's predictable. It wasn't too predictable because unfortunately our Aka didn't quite come in. Again, we were just one result off a clean sweep of a 4 out of 4. We got 3 in the end. Arsenal to beat Everton, they won 3-1, so we got that one right. Although it wasn't enough for them to secure Champions League football for next season. Again, something we'll come on to very shortly. Middlesbrough to fail to score, and they did fail to score. Liverpool won 3-0 against them at Anfield. That was enough to secure them Champions League football. We also said Manchester City would score over 2 goals against Watford, and they did, battering them with 5 goals away at Vicarage Road. The problem kind of came with Leicester versus Bournemouth. We expected over 3 goals for those two sides. It ended with a 1-1. What a shame. But this is the second week in a row where we've been one result off, Jamie. So any matches you're looking out for in the week ahead that you think are good Aka fodder?
They're all cup finals, so it's really tough.
Yeah.
I think it would be going for like I had quite a lot of success going for the corners this weekend. So I think going for something like that or shots or whatever, something like that, I think would be a bit better plan than simply going for teams to win.
Well, we're going to come on to our Aka for the week ahead later. We might have picked a few teams to win, so that might be... we might
well,
have
no,
messed
no,
up
you,
there.
Can, you get good odds on it.
We'll have to see how that goes. But just turn to the final weekend of the Premier League. Chaos is what happened in some respects, partly because teams turned up to score and partly because maybe some teams didn't turn up to play at all because they had nothing left to play for. We saw 37 goals in just 10 games to seal off another season of Premier League football. As I said just before, Liverpool beat Middlesbrough 3-0 while City pummeled Watford 5-0 away to both secure Champions League football for next season ahead of Arsenal, who finished 5th. Finishing outside the top 4 for the first time in Arsene Wenger's reign at the Emirates or at Highbury. He's been there for so long, he's managed at 2 stadiums. What is it, 20 years now? 21 years in August it'll be? Basically, the guy's been there a long time. Whether he will be there next season, well, you have to wait and see yet because we're still waiting on news of that. Jamie, if you did the best teams in the top 6 actually finish in the top 4 in the end?
Yeah, I think they did. It would have been interesting to see if United hadn't have had the Europa League, to see if they'd made a better fist of it. Or maybe that would have just been Mourinho without an excuse with all the draws. But yeah, I think they did. It felt a little bit like Liverpool and Man City limped over a bit, but I think it was more to do with Arsenal hitting a really good run of form towards the end of the season. I mean, they only lost to Spurs, I think it was, and the rest of the games they won pretty much since they moved to that back 3. So, yeah, I think they did pretty much. I wouldn't have... You can't really argue for United being in there. So.
But could you argue for Arsenal, George? Do you think that the top 4 reflects the best 4 teams of the top 6?
I think it does. I think that Arsenal have been too poor for too long this season. Obviously, a good result against Everton, but again, this is an Everton team who have nothing to play for.
Mm. And their defending was shocking.
Absolutely awful. You know, Laurent Koscielny was sent off after, 13 minutes, and Arsenal were already 1-0 up, but even when they went down to 10 men, and losing a player. I mean, we saw with Bayern Munich twice how poor Arsenal can look without Koscielny, whereas this time, you know, they look no different whatsoever. But that's the issue with these final games of the season. These are pivotal games for certain clubs, but the teams they're playing against basically don't really want to be there. They don't want to get injured. They've got nothing really to play for. And people talk about the financial rewards for these teams and finishing a place or two higher than you know, there's a big financial difference between finishing, say, 7th and 8th. But that doesn't translate to the players. And you can see in pretty much every game yesterday that one of the teams there just wasn't really, just didn't really turn up. And that's a bit of a shame.
How would you improve that then?
I'm trying to work out how. I mean, it's difficult to introduce rewards for players for finishing positions, but that is an option. We see so often during the season there are complaints about teams not necessarily playing their strongest team or not necessarily giving their all, which is, does a disservice to other teams in the league. But then you look at yesterday's game and you look at the abject performance of someone like Middlesbrough, who just didn't turn up, and they seemed happy just to sit back and eventually, I mean, it may have taken them a bit of time for Liverpool to score, but it was an inevitability. And for Arsenal, that's a bit of a shame because they've gone and they've done their job. But then you could argue that Everton also are poor. It's a difficult thing. I think it's maybe because this season the league was done and dusted so early and the relegation picture was done before the last game of the season. It's a slight anomaly because normally the focus isn't on these fixtures. But this season, because it was a bit of a non-event the last game, it just seemed a shame that these teams just didn't turn up. They were not Premier League teams playing in Premier League games.
It's a bit of a controversial idea, but in certain other European leagues, it has been known for big clubs to put a bit of a cash reward down for smaller clubs to play against bigger teams on the final day of the season when it is actually going to affect the outcome of a top four place or a title. Do you think that's a bit dodgy, Jamie, or is that something you think that would actually help to give a bit more meaning to these kind of games?
That is a bit dodgy. But, I think the thing is, I was talking to someone about this the other day, and there are goal bonuses and things like that, so the players aren't playing for nothing. And if they go out and score like a hat-trick, they're going to get a lot of money themselves. So, I mean, there is money there, and I'm sure the clubs do incentivize them to win the league, but I'm pretty sure it might may filter down. I'm not sure. I don't know anything about how the bonuses work in terms of positions.
But they tried to keep it as obscure as possible.
I'd be surprised if there wasn't something there.
There are certain managers who are quite kind of outspokenly disagree with it with individual player bonuses because they say that it means that they play for players and not the team. So it's difficult really to know. Well, I suppose you can look at yesterday's scores and probably see who gets them and who doesn't. Stoke are probably a team obviously do, and you know Watford probably aren't. So.
I think there's flipping it the other way. I think Tony Pulis' sides, after they reached the magic 40-point mark, I think someone extrapolated their form after they hit that mark. And if you did it over a full season, they'd finish with less points than Sunderland did in that woeful season. They would finish with less than Derby did.
Like watching Charlton.
Yeah.
It's under Kerbishley, not Charlton now.
But both are pretty bad.
Charlton now are not very good. I can tell you that.
Yeah, they are not a positive example in any way, shape or form. But just to return to the idea of basically excuses that might be there for certain managers that need them. Arsenal finished the season with 75 points. Now, no side has ever finished outside the top four with that kind of points tally at the end. Can Wenger look to that as an excuse, or as George said, were they just too bad for too long?
Yeah, I also think the top four, the top six teams have been so much better than they have been in the last few seasons. There really seems like there has been like a big push away from the rest of the league. The thing with Arsenal, they have these dips every single year, and there's always been someone there that they've always been in there. They've always been in like third or fourth and going for a title. This time they're in a completely different position. And yeah, I completely agree. I just don't think they've been good enough. Some of the games, that game down at Bournemouth when they were 3-0 down, I think it was half time. The Palace game, they were 3-0. These are teams you shouldn't be losing by that many to if you want to get in the Champions League spots.
Yeah.
I don't think you'd see any of the other teams in the top four put in a performance that badly against teams that are back sort of mid to lower table.
No one in the top six is quite so prone to capitulating in the same way, are they?
I mean, you could see United drawing, but you couldn't see them going out and getting absolutely battered by one of those teams.
And United have drawn a lot this season. I think they've finished with more draws than Middlesbrough, actually. They've had the most draws in the Premier League.
14, was it? I think.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's
too many. But it's also a sign of, Mal have said it before, that they have been unlucky in the past. I mean, obviously, not being able to put teams to the sword with the attacking talent that they've got, it isn't good enough. But having said that, you know, it just takes a couple of those draws to turn into wins, and they'd have been right in amongst it. I do think this top six, if you look at all the teams, kind of all six are basically in transition. Chelsea are obviously the team that have completed that transition the best. We've seen Spurs, you know, their young stars coming of age kind of yet again this season and improving again, whereas Arsenal are in transition the other way. And it feels like, you know, the likes of City and Liverpool, who still, you know, Jurgen Klopp may have been around for 18 months, but I think this is still a team, you know, a work in progress. And these are teams, especially those two and Spurs, who've finished the season very strongly. And I think that could be a sign of things to come basically next season, as these, you know, especially City, it finally feels like maybe Guardiola's team has started to find his groove. He's started to work out which players he wants to play in which roles, and they're starting to buy into his philosophy. So maybe this strong finish, despite the fact they're playing against teams who probably struggled in some pub leagues based on those displays, maybe it's a sign of a you know, what's to come next season.
Well, just going through the actual games that ended these team seasons on the final day in the Premier League. As I said, Liverpool beat Middlesbrough 3-0. Was finishing in the top four despite the injuries, despite the loss of form, despite the lack of a plan B, someone has said. Was this a vindication for Klopp, or was he quite lucky to make it over the line? You said Liverpool and City kind of limped in the end, Jamie.
Yeah, I think I do place quite a lot of emphasis on those injuries, because Mane especially not being there for large parts of the season hit them so hard, because he was such a good signing this season, like in a lot of player team of the seasons, and you can't rely on someone like, for example, you bring Sturridge and he does score a couple of goals, but you can't rely on him for a whole season. And I think and Coutinho was injured as well for large parts of it. This is their best two players. Henderson's been out for a while, so I think he's done well to get them in there. But I don't think Liverpool fans thought they were going to win the league at the beginning of the season, really. So to get top four, it's an improvement for them.
But while they might not have thought they were going to win this out at the start of the season, about a quarter, maybe a third of the way into the season, there was definitely the Reds are marching up the hill moment, wasn't there? There was a sense that they're now up there with the title chase, especially when Chelsea seemed to break the spell of everyone thinking it was a Manchester title to be won or lost. Do you think that there's been a bit of a climb down for Liverpool in that sense? Or is Jamie right? They should never have been viewing themselves as title favourites anyway, so they should be happy they've got top four, regardless of whether they limped over the line or not.
I think inevitably in any Premier League season, there are probably going to be four or five teams at least who think they can win the league at some stage, and only one can actually do it. So, I mean, the difficulty for them now is that of all the teams, with possibly the exception of Chelsea, although their young talent is obviously quite decent, Liverpool seemed to me the one who really lacked in strength and depth. A couple of injuries and they're suddenly down to the bare bones. We saw that Mane is someone who they've really missed. They don't really have anyone else like that who can both play between the lines and play kind of off the shoulder and get in behind as well. And so that's basically what they need to do now. I think that they're still lacking the players for Klopp's system. We've seen the transformation of Adam Lallana, which has taken about 18 months of Jurgen Klopp's tenure, but finally he's got a player now who can play in that role, but he's had to create that player rather than buy him. So it's going to be hard for next season. They've got Champions League football to deal with, which we know is basically a bit of a, you know, it's not great for your league form, it means, and especially the way that they play with their intensity, they're going to need bodies in this summer and people who can actually do the job rather than just guys who can be stopgaps in that team. Look at, you know, Lucas comes in centre midfield for Liverpool, and you know he's a good player in a system, in certain systems, but he's not really the player they need to come in when they need a centre midfielder. It's kind of second or choice, basically.
Well, he's made a player out of Adam Lallana, but he's failed to make a player, not really through his own fault, out of guys like Alberto Moreno. There's a lot of players in this Liverpool side that you're looking at going, whether they bring in stars or more depth next season, maybe there's questions over their future. So how would you take this team forward, Jamie? Would you aim at bringing in like ready-made first team players, or look to add more depth to the team? And if so, which areas of the squad do you think most need reinforcement?
It's going to be really, if Man United get the Champions League as well, there's five teams competing for these players that are in the same like real upper echelon of players. So, I mean, it's tough to, I think they'll get enough games if they come to Liverpool. I think they'll have seen the fact that a lot of their players do spend time out injured. So you'll be able to attract players by saying, look, you'll be in the squad and you'll get 20 to 30 games a season in all competitions. I mean, I've said before, I think they need a centre forward. I think they need someone who's going to score a goal every single week. You don't want, like, I mean, in my if I was managing them, I wouldn't want players just getting 10 a season. I'd want like a Harry Kane or a Lukaku getting over 20 goals a season every single season, because you can rely on it every single week. And I think especially just nicking late goals in the league, turn those losses and draws into wins.
Mm. Do you see any other part of the team that you think needs a star or needs someone to come in and can upgrade rather than just the centre forward?
Yeah, definitely. I think their defence needs basically a complete rehaul.
But I mean, Lovren's been handed this new contract.
I know. But, well, you have to assume that Sakho is going to go, in which case they need probably at least two new centre-backs, even just for depth purposes. Matip, after having such a sterling start, he's had a good season. He's probably been the star of their defence. Mm-hmm. I think Milner's actually done an okay job at left-back, but they probably need someone who can come in. I think Nathaniel Clyne is a player who I basically don't really think is up to it. He seems to get away pretty scot-free from criticism, but he seems to me to be pretty average. He doesn't offer too much going forward. I'd argue Milner probably offers more going forward than Clyne does, and he's not particularly sound defensively either. So I think you can look at all four positions at the back and see where they can improve. The irony is that I think that Sakho is basically a player that they need, that kind of left-footed centre-back who can both play out at the back and defend effectively in the air and on the ground, but obviously relationships with the manager have collapsed to the extent that it'll be very, very unlikely to see him playing Liverpool again.
Mm. We saw the importance of a player like Nuri Sahin or Ilkay Gundogan for Klopp at Dortmund, also a player like Sven Bender as well. Do you think there's anything that needs to be done, especially with Henderson's own injury record, in that important kind of spot to build up play? Because as you said, Lucas, not quite up to his going on as well. Emre Can's had flashes, but hasn't quite looked that kind of player yet. Do you think they should be blowing money in midfield as well?
Possibly. I think Henderson's importance to that team is possibly underestimated. So as long as, you know, he'll be back in at the beginning of next season, and so long as he is fit and he's available, he's their captain, he will start centre midfield. So you don't really want to bring in someone who's going to be directly maybe competing with him, maybe a younger version. I do think Emre Can, despite his many shortcomings, he's still very, very young, and he's immensely talented as a footballer. And I think that this is, like we said with Lallana, with the transformation of player, I think that this is someone who Jurgen Klopp is going to have to work with and going to have to try and make into that player who can kind of play on the left-hand side of Henderson, flanking him and being that kind of more ball-playing and not necessarily as high-intense. The intensity to his play won't be as high, but can still kind of use the ball effectively. So yes, I think that maybe they could bring in one more body there, but I don't think it's necessarily the key position for them. I think up front and at the back. I mean, interestingly, we're not talking about goalkeepers, and who'd have thought that for you? Because, you know, Mignolet's had an absolutely brilliant end to the season, so you know they look well stocked in that position now.
Mm. And Klopp's never really been one for, I mean, not to say that Roman Weidenfeller is a bad keeper, but goalkeepers have never really been that much of a focus point for Klopp. He's just kind of got on with keepers that are good rather than great, really.
Yeah, I think he tried it a little bit at Liverpool at the beginning of this season, and it kind of fell flat on its face with Karius. I mean, maybe he'll come back and prove us wrong. But yeah, I agree with about Klein. He's the one in there that isn't. I thought he'd kick on massively, and he really hasn't. Like, I just because I always thought of him as like an attacking fullback, and yeah, Milner's I think put in has one of the highest crossing totals in the entire league this season,
and he's on his weakest foot on the left as well because he's a right-footed player.
Exactly. Even if you compare, I mean, obviously as an England right back, or a possible England right back in Klein, I mean, if you're an England fan now, you'd have Kieran Trippier and Kyle Walker so far ahead of him. I mean, that's just it's not even comparable. Like the performance Trippier's put in for Spurs just completely dwarf what Klein's done for Liverpool.
I mean, we're talking there about a need to reinforce in defence. That's kind of been what's been said about Man City all season with Pep Guardiola. They thrashed Watford 5-0 on the last day of the season. Before we get onto the problems at the back for them, Sergio Aguero is a false nine. It looks like the kind of missing piece of the puzzle that no one knew was missing for Man City. We knew they were good in attack. They already created the most big chances in the Premier League this season, but this looks like a really serious kind of epiphany for Pep Guardiola's team, doesn't it?
And the amazing thing about it is that it's kind of the second epiphany since Gabriel Jesus has come into the team, because obviously when he first came in, it was Aguero who was dropped, and we saw that Sané, Jesus, Sterling trio just work absolute wonders. There was that away game at West Ham where they just completely tore them apart. So it's exciting times for City fans, because whilst I think we can all be sure that City will be looking to strengthen in those areas as well, so these are going to be four guys. I mean, anyone who hasn't seen Pep's press conference yesterday when he was asked again whether or not Sergio Aguero would be staying at the club, and he shook his head and he said, you know, this is the 15th time I've said it, he's definitely going to be here.
I was one of the guys in the 15 to ask him that, so I feel like I'm part of the straw that broke the
camel's
back.
One of the early ones though.
It was after the good. Burnley game where he came on and scored the goal, and I was just like, well, what more does he have to do? And he just completely
and,
the question.
And everyone else there was like, could Aguero leave? You're the first. The trailblazer group. It's all your fault.
Sorry, Pat.
I think that we've said it time and time again, and we've seen it a lot, that whilst Aguero has been one of the best strikers in Premier League history, and he's mainly done that playing up top on his own, except for kind of a brief partnership with Edin Dzeko and also Negredo for a time. He's someone who revels having players alongside him. Mm. So, and if it's taking Guardiola a bit of time to implement that system, that's fine. I do think that next season we'll still see a fair amount of rotation up top. And I'd be surprised if Aguero makes more than, say, 25 starts in the Premier League. But, you know, he's got a role to play, and I'm sure he'll score goals in that system.
Mm. And, I mean, some people say a flat-track bully doesn't do it against the big teams. But, I mean, you're talking about Liverpool. That's what you need. Like, flat-track bullies get a bad press.
Yeah, they do, and you only have to look at Kane the last two games to score two hat-tricks in a week against teams that have, in a 6-1 and a 7-1. So, you do need them to do it, but you also need them to do it in other games, and you look at someone like Costa this season, the amount of points that he's won Chelsea is very, very high, but I think Aguero is, from what I can remember, is quite high on that list as well in terms of winning City points. So, I'm excited to see this front three and what they do. And it's perfect having Sterling there as a backup or as the first choice to see what happens. They're injured a lot, these players. So,
but do you think that is a problem for Sterling now? Because Gabriel Jesus looked very good on the right. Leroy Sané looked very good on the left. Okay, they're all moving around, not quite playing that position. But it's not very clear where Raheem Sterling is going to be, if he's going to be a starting player in that kind of that makeup. If this is the first choice setup for Pep now, is this... Has he been downgraded in his place in the squad, do you reckon?
I think he has, but I mean, he needs to improve himself to get better. He's a £50 million player, which I think a lot of people forget, and he needs to live up to that.
I'd say the other thing about Sterling is that he's, you know, and I think whenever Sterling's mentioned these days, people always say this, but he is still so young.
Yeah.
And he's played a lot of games this season, and you've got Leroy Sané didn't break into the first team properly until about January. So he's only played half a season, whereas Sterling now, you know, they're not playing for much. He's going to have his first summer off in a long while, which is going to be important for him. And as I said, I think if you asked Pep Guardiola where Gabriel Jesus is, Manchester
don't
City...
Don't ask him where players are going. Don't ask him.
But I think if you asked him where Gabriel Jesus' future lies, it would be a centre-forward. And if that's the case, then there is that gap at right wing. So as, you know, as I said, with I'm sure Aguero will play a lot next season, I'm fairly confident that Raheem Sterling will have a big role to play as well.
I mean, maybe Sterling's future is actually the backup to Sterling's role. Aguero's role at the moment, in that kind of withdrawn kind of position, not quite a 10, not quite a false 9. You're playing as if there's a player in front of you, but there isn't, and you're just like a dribbler.
He's starting to shoot then, I think is the issue.
Well, this is the thing though. Aguero's not shooting that much. He's more he's bringing the defenders on, dribbling a bit, and then opening the spaces for somebody else.
Of course.
We kind of saw Sterling do that for Liverpool, didn't we, when he was playing behind Suarez. And Sturridge. Yeah.
I think that's one of the great things we've seen in Raheem Sterling this season, who I think has had a very good season. It's just a new aspect to his game where he's both very comfortable getting chalk in his boots and playing down the flank, but he's also been since basically Sané's come into the team, because having those two wide players, basically Sané literally stays so wide at all times, it creates that gap at the back post. We've seen Raheem Sterling, obviously his finishing isn't as good as it could be, but we've seen him pop up at that back post time and time again since the turn of the year, and he'll score goals if he does that. You know, if he's got a player with Sané's delivery and Sané's style, with Aguero whose movement is so good in the middle, then I mean, I'm still very, very positive about the future of Raheem Sterling at City. Mm-hmm.
But looking at the defence that Pep Guardiola has got to build this attack upon, is there any chance that if he makes his team so dangerous going forward, then he might not have to do too much upgrading at the back? Okay, they need to kind of move on their really old fullbacks. But City, we discussed on the pod previously, got quite a bit of talent coming through the academy in defensive areas. Does he need to be spending big money on big names at the back, or can he hope that the kind of front wheel drive aspect of this team, if they can score the amount of goals that people are now expecting to next season, could that just be like a deterrent to stop teams getting at their defence?
The problem with City is I think they've been burnt quite a few times with spending huge amounts on central defenders. So I don't know whether the ownership will come into it at all with that.
And the players they bought and then let go as well. Like Boateng was there, and then they got rid of Savic and they got rid of Nastasic. Maybe they just need to stick with these guys.
Yeah, and I think that like if you can get a whole season out of Kompany, then he's still a very, very good defender. I know they haven't had particularly hard games recently, but he's still played consistently and they've looked a lot more solid. So if you can keep Kompany in there, especially as a leader in that team as well, and he's been there and won titles with City twice, I think that would really benefit, especially just play Stones there next to Kompany for a season. If you can keep them both fit, then why not?
I assume that Kyle Walker will probably end up there. You'd have thought. I mean, he seems to fit basically everything that Pep wants in a fullback. Where defensive, not he's not weak defensively, but you know, attacking capabilities are far more important than what you do at the back. If you look at the way Barcelona and Real Madrid and even Bayern Munich have used fullbacks in recent years, it's that style of where they effectively play in front of the holding midfield players. And that pivot, that kind of wide pivot for players to basically bounce off. And that's exactly where Kyle Walker is at his best. And he's a very attacking player. And I think that he would completely change the way that they'd look on that right flank, make them far more dynamic. And it looks like Spurs are pretty happy to let him go as well. So I mean, that would be a signing I wouldn't be surprised to see happen fairly soon.
One to look out for in the summer. But just sticking around defenders, Arsenal beat Everton 3-1, but with no help from Lauren Koscielny, who, as we've already discussed, was sent off for a very silly challenge, straight red in the ahead of the FA Cup final, which he will now miss. Apparently, Shkodran Mustafi is also struggling with concussion problems.
Was it a red?
I think it was a red. I mean,
very out of control.
He was just so late.
Yeah.
But like, I mean, I just don't know how dangerous. I mean, it was obviously a foul, and it was obviously just so late. I just don't know if.
I
looked so messy. Yeah, as well. Yeah. It was like just two ice hockey players had hit each other.
It reminded me of a Granit Xhaka tackle.
Yeah.
In the sense that maybe he wasn't trying to break the guy's leg, but
it was dangerous.
It
was so late. Yeah, it was stupid.
So red for me. Are you a red on that one, Jamie?
Yeah.
You're a dark yellow. Plus makes, for you.
No, I'm not having any of that dark yellow stuff.
An orange card.
No, I'm not having any of that. I feel like when you've got an FA Cup final. I mean, but for someone. I think we all know that Arsenal are a team who really need leaders, and Lauren Koscielny is showing a panache for being able to get sent off when Arsenal really need him, which isn't really what they need.
It's not great. No. But what I was going to come to is that you need a leader. Per Mertesacker played his first game of the season on the final day of the Premier League season for Arsenal. Is he the answer in the FA Cup final now that Koscielny's out?
I guess so, possibly.
He's by default.
He's a good player. He's a World Cup winner, as we always say. He's got good experience. He's still a club captain, I think.
Yeah.
I guess so. I mean, I personally would have played him a lot more than Gabriel's played this year as well.
He hasn't even played any reserve football either. That was literally his first game of football.
Yeah, it's absolutely extraordinary. But having said that, I can imagine that possibly Chelsea will be hoping that he will be lining up, because I think that Eden Hazard would quite like fancy his chances at getting Pair on the turn.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that this is time for Holding to step up and kind of chaperone poor old Mertesacker through for an FA Cup final?
Isn't Gabriel injured as well?
This is the whole thing. So
they're all.
Mustafi's got this concussion problem, which he will probably be fit, but it's a doubt. Mm-hmm. Gabriel's got this issue.
Monreal play on the left of the three.
Sure, yeah, he could play as well.
And then Holding on the right, and then.
But you wonder, Monreal's been all right in that back three, but he's been all right playing next to Koscielny.
Yeah.
And Mertesacker, as I say, hasn't played any football, and I don't think he's played in the back three.
I mean, the thing about
in his career.
At least if that is a three, at least with Monreal and Holding either side of him, he's got two seriously mobile guys. I mean, Monreal's a fullback by trade, and Holding looks, you know, proper prospect and a real athlete. So if he is going to play, at least that's maybe a system where it would work.
Not too worried then. You think they can just about overcome it? Or
I wouldn't be worried about Arsenal, but like they're gonna. I thought they were gonna lose without Koscielny, and then I saw that yesterday and Gabriel go down, and I was like, oh my god, this is not looking good.
Do you think Mertesacker can do a David Luiz and suddenly be empowered by this back three? Or like George says, will Eden Hazard just be licking his lips?
Yeah, he can, but he won't. According to
Conte, they're favourites.
Yeah, apparently so, yeah. Do we agree with that?
No.
No.
No. Fair enough. Just before we move on to the other questions on this game, obviously Bellerin got a goal to open the scoring against Everton. In just looking ahead to the cup final, would you start him or Oxlade-Chamberlain as the right wing back?
I would start. I mean, it's strange because it's almost got to the stage now where you think of Bellerin as the more attacking of the two kind of right wing backs, even though one is by trade. I think Bellerin's. I think Wenger's dealt with Bellerin very well, where his form dipped. He took him out of the side for Oxlade-Chamberlain, who performed admirably. But I think since then, since he's come back, he's been very good. I think one thing about Bellerin's goal yesterday is it's masked one of the misses of season from Danny Welbeck.
Which means it was a classic Arsenal assist. Like, don't shoot, you're gonna pass it on.
A little touch, so you get the assist.
Exactly. I'd probably stick with Hector, I think.
Yeah. It's weird. It seems to me that Oxlade-Chamberlain, if you want someone to do the crosses, he's your man. If you want someone to kind of get forward to the byline but then cut inside and attack the box, it's all about Bellerin, isn't it? Mm.
Yeah. Exactly.
Would you pick Oxlade-Chamberlain for this one, or we do know how weak Chelsea can be in the air, especially on their far side of their defence.
Yeah, but are Arsenal good enough in the air to exploit that?
Olivier Giroud.
Is he definitely going to start? Like,
Arsenal winning the FA Cup by taking a leaf out of Maurizio Pochettino and Spurs' book would be tremendous.
Would be quite magical in its own special way. But one player that could replace Giroud up front in this game, or he's probably likely to start behind him, is Alexis Sanchez. Bayern Munich are now apparently favourites to sign him if he does move this summer, with his countryman Arturo Vidal making overtures, or at least people associated with the two players making some rather obvious links there. Just how big a blow could losing Champions League football next season be to Arsenal with players like Alexis Sanchez uncertain about their futures, Jamie?
I think there'll only be a couple that go if they do, and it'll be sad. Like, are they really going to let him run down his contract and just leave for free? Like, it's at least then I don't know what you get from that, really, unless they go out and win the league next season. What does that achieve? But if they don't need the money, then hats off to them, do that. But I just don't think that many of them will leave because they're not. They're good players, but they're not like very, very top level. And they could do with a season of just scrapping it out in the Europa League and trying to get back into the top four again. Maybe they'll achieve more like enlightenment from doing that.
Well, we always talk about how a club can be refreshed by being relegated to the Championship to remake themselves and come back up stronger. So it's almost pulling out the top four, as United fans and Liverpool fans will attest. It's almost like a relegation from the top part of the table, isn't it, in a way?
But the issue is there that if you do fall out of it, then you want to fall right out of it like Chelsea did, and you want to come 10th, so you just don't have any European football to deal with at all.
So you're saying Wenger failed too successfully?
Maybe he'll do like the old League Cup thing that he used to do and just play like a complete team of youngsters in the Europa League.
It will be his Europa League captain.
There's something about this Arsenal team, and it's because, you know, you've had Arsenal fans saying for years and years how they need to spend more money, and then they went out and they bought Mesut Ozil, a kind of watershed transfer, and then they went out and got Alexis Sanchez. And you wonder if the way that team is built and the way that Arsene Wenger treats his players, that they need to actually have players who cultivate their reputation at Arsenal, because it just hasn't worked. Is it that shocking that this change of transfer policy and bringing in these two guys who've still been, you know, in my opinion, both have been great players for them, but it's come at a cost of effectively the whole team around them looking weaker and therefore them dropping out of the top four. So. I don't think necessarily, if they can get a few quid for them, I don't think it's necessarily the worst thing, and they should reinvest maybe a bit smarter rather than going out and finding basically on Football Manager, the highest price transfer to player. I mean, that's
well, I'm not sure if these two names fit the smart bracket or fit the overpriced bracket, but what next for Romelu Lukaku? There's quite a few Arsenal fans that would like to see him come to the Emirates next season to kind of give them the straight up firepower that they feel they may lack. Is he a smart signing for them, or do you reckon they're probably getting caught in a bidding war with clubs that are going to blow them out of the water?
I think he's probably Chelsea bound. From all rumours, I think he would be a fine signing for Arsenal. I'm still just a little bit concerned about his goal scoring records against big teams. I know that we say flat-trap bullies are good, but I think it's slightly different when you play for Everton. I'm just not necessarily convinced that he'd be able to do it consistently.
But then weirdly, you look at the stats, I don't think many strikers over the last two seasons have actually scored that many against the big teams. Really.
No, they haven't. And that is true. And obviously, it's natural that you score more goals against smaller teams, and therefore, but at the same, and I think Lukaku scored a goal again in each game against City, but he also scores a lot of goals for Everton late in games when the game's already won. He's obviously a very good player, but you know, you look at his time at Chelsea, he didn't score. I mean, and I know he didn't play particularly often. He was mainly off the bench when he did come on, and he was a few years younger. But I still just feel like, even though he's a proven Premier League goal scorer, I still feel like his signing would be something of a risk.
Fair enough. Just another player that could be on his way out of Everton. Well, I mean, it looks pretty much over for him, to be honest with you, at Goodison Park. Looking at Ronald Koeman's quotes after the game against Arsenal, that's Ross Barkley, his manager, doesn't sound very impressed with him, doesn't sound like he really wants him around anymore. He'd rather cash in and invest in the squad. And what do you see next for him, Jamie?
I think he'll go to a very good club towards the possibly Tottenham, and probably have to play second fiddle to their superior players in those positions, like Ali and Eriksen. He's not getting in ahead of them, and he's probably not going to get in ahead of Son either.
But there's been rumours that he could actually drop deeper. He could become the successor to Moussa Dembélé. I mean, it might not sound weird given how high he plays for Everton, but you look at him, especially the player he was as a youngster, and his attributes. With the right coaching, and Pochettino is that kind of coach, do you reckon he's got what it takes to play a deeper role, maybe?
Yeah, he's a big bloke in stature. Get him in the gym and get him a bit, bulk him up even more. And Dembele's quite a unique player, I think, that players just seem to bounce off him, and he seems like he's just holding people at an arm's length half the time. So to get to that level, then maybe. But I see a good future for him.
He's a young one that people often think's older than he is.
I mean, I don't think Everton are treating him particularly well at the moment, but because he is one of their own players. But I mean, if he won't sign a contract and Koeman's policy is to just be like, right, that's it, then don't upset the gaffer.
No, fair enough. And it is the kind of that presence at the club. It's definitely what Everton fans are liking about Ronald Koeman. He's got this kind of like, I don't know, he's a manager who likes to take control, and that's definitely been appreciated. But if Barkley does move on, What do you make of his future, George?
I agree about Spurs. I think Spurs have, especially this Spurs regime, have kind of a track record of taking players and basically turning into the player they need to be. If you look at Eric Dier, who came in as a centre back, you look at Dembélé, who came in as an attacking midfielder.
Mm. Well, people forget in
Dele Alli this season as well, turning into a number 10. I think that they can basically take your best attributes and make you into the player you need to be. I definitely think that Ross Barkley should play deeper, because playing in advanced roles, he just lets fly way, way too often and basically gifts the opposition possession. And it's something that many football fans like to see, players shooting from distance. And I think, but if you actually look at the stats of Barkley's kind of conversion rates and where he's shooting from, it's actually of detriment. So I think he needs a manager who believes in him, and Ronald Koeman obviously, you know, doesn't do that, and he needs a manager who's going to be willing to spend some time on him and really kind of mould him into the player that he needs to be, because he's obviously very, very, very talented.
He needs to be Umar Niasse, doesn't he?
Wow. We're going to go to Haaland, play up top and fight relegation.
Maybe not. We'll have to see who comes up from the playoff, which we'll come up to very shortly. Yeah, that's a harsh thing to say. Would he be leading the line for Huddersfield or Reading? Probably not. Moving on very swiftly to Manchester United's final game of the season against Crystal Palace. Mourinho handed four debuts to players in his starting 11 and also brought on Angel Gomez, who's 16, youngest player to ever play for Premier League for Man United, to become his fifth debutant, bringing his total for the season up to six young players blooded in the bright red colours of Manchester United. Remembering the list of young players he claimed to have brought through at the start of the season, any cynicism at play here by bringing in five youngsters to make their debuts in the final game of the season with nothing to play for?
I'm already looking forward to the squawker, where are they now, in about 7 days' time of this Man U team. I mean, you have to be cynical. I don't necessarily think that even Mourinho would argue that he's doing this because they all deserve their chance. And also, you've got to remember Josh Harrop, the goal scorer, and what a goal it was too. He's a week older than Anthony Martial. So, you know, it's not necessarily, if Jose Mourinho turns up and starts claiming that he gave a youngster a chance, giving Josh Harrop a chance, then that's moving the goalpost significantly. It's pretty obvious that he's doing this purely just to rest his players. So I'm sure that Mourinho will enjoy telling everyone about this game for years to come. But at the same time, I think we should just not react and just nod our heads and say, okay, Jose, you take that one.
As George said, Josh Harrop's goal was an absolute pearler. And Paul Pogba found the net as well. He also set up the goal for Josh Harrop. Last game of the season, Palace probably didn't have much to play for. They did look a little bit like, you know, not saying they'd given up, but they weren't at full capacity. Are there any lessons, though, in how Mourinho set his side up here? There were less stars. The focus was on Pogba. Rooney even played more of a kind of a support role as well. Has he been trying to cram too many big names into the team this season? Is there an argument that less is more?
I I'm not sure. Like, I just don't think you can judge that much on the last game of the season because it was a complete dead rubber. Mourinho, like, by his own admission, didn't care about the league from about four games ago. So, and like Allardyce had Schlupp at centre back again, which is not a particularly good thing to do. Mm. So, I mean, there are obviously lessons to be learned. I don't think Mourinho will learn them really. I think like he's got those star players. There are like he's. I don't think he'll win the league with Pogba plus like 10 other youngsters. Like they have got some very, very good players. Get them all in the team together. Get someone like Rashford up front for them. Maybe give them a chance, and they'll get very close next season.
But shoehorning someone like James Rodriguez in is that smart or is that just a bit wasteful?
I don't think you necessarily need to. Like they've got a good team there already. Mm.
George, I know you've had some discussions about the contrast between Mkhitaryan and Pogba trying to fight for control of the same team. What do you make of United's future going forward?
It's very hard to say. I mean, I think he has to do one of two things. He has to either retain faith in this undoubtedly very talented squad and you know, they should have enough there. If you compare their attacking lineup to the teams around them, they're not really losing anything. You know, Zlatan, we assume... I mean, do we assume he's not going to be there next season because of the injury, or do we assume either way? I think Rashford's going to have a huge season. You've got to hope that Jose doesn't bring in kind of one or two strikers just immediately to jump above in the pecking order. In terms of Mkhitaryan and Pogba, I think they both had passable seasons. I'm a big fan of Mkhitaryan, and when he broke into the team, I really thought he was going to grab the bull by the horns, but he seems to be far more suited to the Europa League than he is to the Premier League, which is a bad sign. And Paul Pogba again. He's finished the season better than he started, but he started to take control of games, and he started to basically take responsibility for his own performances, which I don't think he was doing initially. But we need to see him improve next season. So, you know, I don't think James is going to happen. I think that's just Rodriguez's agent starting a bidding war or attempting to. Yeah. But there's, you know, I'm sure the Griezmann links are certainly true, and I think the Bakayoko links are true as well.
Bernardo Silva's another one that's been linked as well.
Bakayoko and Bernardo Silva are two top class players, but then are we going to have the same problem again next season where Jose Mourinho isn't the best at blooding players, isn't the best at bringing players out from Europe and into the Premier League? He doesn't give people time to settle unless he spent £89 million on them. And part of me just thinks that a tweak here, just a player, one or two players in positions where they've already got the depth where they can introduce them slowly, is more important than wholesale changes. But a combination of Jose and Ed Woodward means there's probably going to be hundreds of millions of pounds spent again at Old Trafford.
Mm. Well, it's good for the marketing department, might not necessarily be good for the football department. But moving on now to Chelsea's 5-1 win against Sunderland, a pretty emphatic way to bow out with their title in their hands. But John Terry said goodbye to Stamford Bridge in emotional scenes as Sunderland kicked the ball out for him so he could go off. It wasn't actually the 26th minute, apparently. He probably walked off in the 28th minute. It was meant to be the 26th minute, but...
Took so long.
Yeah, because his shirt number was 26. It meant to be his whole, like, ceremonial
Sunderland
moment.
Can't do anything.
No, they can't. They really can't. Some loved it, some hated it, but without wishing to be Mr. Captain Buzzkill, any concerns over David Moyes later admitting that Chelsea requests Sunderland put the ball out and they went for it? There's potential... Okay, this is worst-case scenario, but there's potential spot-fixing issues here, isn't there?
So I've seen the, you know, the spot-fixing argument and having worked in the gambling industry, my concerns with that is that they're basically... It should be an issue, but they basically aren't really the markets to really bet on that necessarily. Like,
you know, we should be putting money on shirt number-based substitutions in the future.
But no one offers that. I mean, that's the thing. Like, you can these days bet on basically everything, and especially with spread betting, they offer markets. And maybe if it was a bigger game than Chelsea-Sunderland, if it was a Champions League final, maybe I'd bet on minutes played and stuff like that. Mm. But if anyone can show me a bet that you could have made that would have profited out of John Terry being substituted, a player performance, if they're offering Terry, possibly, but really there are very few things where it could actually where it could go on and B, where the liabilities would be anything like enough to that to be an issue. So whilst it certainly brings the integrity of the game under the spotlight, I don't think that here there's any realistic spots fixing likelihood.
Well, the FA are looking into it apparently, but rather than being something more insidious, is it just another example of David Moyes just he's just hapless, isn't he? He just kind of stumbles from crisis to crisis.
Yeah, and if everything he does is just ridiculous at the moment. But why not just wait till the end of the game? Like, there's no need for this.
I've never seen a mid-game God of Honor.
No, why? Like, I know they have the title presentation at the end as well, but just have that. You don't need this as well, because he hasn't even retired, has he?
No.
So he might go and play somewhere else next season.
Might go to Sunderland. Probably not go to Sunderland. That's it.
I'd have really enjoyed it if he'd been really angry he's being subbed. Stormed off, like, pulled the shin pads off.
I'm not going to lie. At first, I thought it was a forced substitution because he'd been so bad for the Mankio goal. But that's just me. He has been. The thing is, though, he has been. I think he's been really poor the last few games.
Well, he's hardly played, has he?
True, but there's this talk. Oh, he could come and add like something to Swansea or to Bournemouth. I mean, in theory, yes. But do you think that? I mean, he's slower than ever. Does he actually have the kind of the mental attributes and the passing to overcome those weaknesses?
It's really hard to say. I mean, you look at the likes of kind of John O'Shea and what he's done at Sunderland, and you think probably not, because it's been a bit of a disaster, to be honest. But you know, a word on Terry is that what he's done for the Premier League, you know, if we get past his, you know, some of his misdemeanors in the past.
That's a good euphemism.
On pure footballing terms, he really is just an absolutely unbelievable player, has been an incredible player. He doesn't get enough credit for how good he is with the ball at his feet. As a ball-playing centre-back, he's been one of the best we've seen in this country. And whilst I disagree with 28-minute, guard of honours, I still think that it's, you know, it's one of the basically Premier League, on a purely football level, one of the Premier League legends, no longer playing for a team for whom he has defined their recent history. So, you know, he deserves some kind of credit.
you're literally grimacing at saying that. That's,
I know. It says a lot, that, though.
A legend in a very, very, very different and smaller sense. Two late goals for Michy Batshuayi. Let's not forget the man who ultimately won Chelsea the title this season. If Costa does move on, or even if he doesn't this summer, does the Belgian have more to do next season for Chelsea? Does he have enough about him to have a bigger role in the side, especially with Champions League football coming in?
Yeah, I think it's an interesting... Like, I mean, where would you rate him compared to Lukaku? Like, I think that's a really interesting question. Like, why spend 80 million on Lukaku when you could just try Batshuayi, who has performed every single time he's been put in the team this season? I think it's one goal every 47 minutes now. I know most of his performances have been off the bench, but
even at the start of the season, he came on. I think he scored, and he also set up an assist for Costa as well.
Yeah, I think it was maybe the Watford game away when he came on and looked really, really good. So yeah, I think he 100% should be given a chance. He was a player who cost, I think it was £32 million. So I mean, he's not cheap by any means, and I don't see enough to be spending that much money on Lukaku when you've got this guy and you could play him. I mean, they'd need, I think, backups for him just because they have got the Champions League. But if you're going to get rid of Costa, just try Batshuayi and maybe bring in Llorente as the other guy, maybe.
Give it a go. I mean, he got his 50th goal of the season on the last day as
Llorente.
Well.
Llorente, one of the signings of the season, I think.
Mm-hmm. We might get onto that a bit later on. But before we do, Chris or C Armband on Twitter asks, which other clubs besides Chelsea deserve an A for their work this season? If we're doing the whole report card thing.
Yeah, no, Burnley, possibly, just for not going down.
Would you say it's an A or a B+? Because they ended quite
I think it's still an A. I think that whilst they kind of nearly got dragged into it, I think that they, to be honest, I think their squad is effectively one of the worst probably we've seen in Premier League history, and they stayed up pretty comfortably. And especially after what happened last season, last time in the Premier League, where they started off well and then had a huge slump and ended up going down. I think to, you know, arrest that slide and ensure they didn't do it again. That would be my other A.
Anybody else to give an A for you, Jamie?
I think you've got to put Bournemouth in there just because they're a small team with a lot of that team is still the team that came up through the divisions with Eddie Howe. And he's managed to, I think they finished in the top 10 in the end, which is such an achievement for them. I think there's quite a lot of teams that if you had them on a school report card, you'd kind of be like, they pissed around in the first half of the year and then kind of turned up when the exams were happening, like Swansea and people like that who have done very, very well in the second half of the season, but were absolutely awful in the first half.
Neil Clement gets an A.
Yeah, yeah.
Paul Clement.
Sorry. Neil Clement.
Neil Clement left back.
Gosh, imagine that. I don't even know he's been doing this season as well. But he deserves one for his career. No, and I'd also say Spurs also deserve an A as well. Because
A minus, so surely, just for no silverware.
But then it's easy to forget just, you know, at the beginning of the season in the betting markets, they were the sixth of those six.
Well, yeah, I remember in the last season, start of this one, in all our predictions going, our Spurs are good, but the money that's going to pour into the rest of the top six, they're going to get shunted down.
So in terms of pure overachievement, I mean, they have to rank up right up there, and that's why they'd also get an A from me.
Which brings us nicely to Spurs, who absolutely pummeled, another pummeling on the last day of the season for big team to a lesser team. Hull City lost 1-7 to Tottenham Hotspur at the KCOM Stadium. Spurs, I think they finish as the highest scorers and the least goals conceded.
These losses.
Yeah.
Go on.
I mean,
win the league, though.
Not the most points.
they're joint third highest points tally for a runner-up in the Premier League era, but where would you rank them as amongst the runners-up? Are they one of the best ever, or a weak season, or how would you place them in history?
I think they're a really good side, and it's such a shame that they're having to play at Wembley next season, because to see them at White Hart Lane again, playing where they're comfortable and everything else, I'd have them up there as real challenges, because I don't think that they have the same, because they played in the Europa League for the last 3 years, so they're not one of these teams where you're like, oh well, now they've got the Champions League. It's like, well, now they've had the Europa League for ever, it seems, and the Champions League, of course. So I think they're one of the best teams to come runners up. They just seem to be going a level up every single season, and the next level is a trophy. It's going to be a lot to get them to that, I think, because they need to get past Chelsea.
I do think that whilst right now the Wembley thing looks like it's going to be difficult for them to overcome, some of those performances from the beginning of the season at Wembley and now don't look quite so bad. Obviously, the Monaco one is the main one, where at that time no one really quite knew just how good Monaco were. And the flip side of that as well is that this is a very, very young Spurs team, the majority of which are English. And these guys haven't, like Raheem Sterling, haven't had a summer off in a long time. And I think this summer, where they're going to finally have a break, most of them, have a bit of time where they can actually come back into the season fresh, is going to be, you'd have thought, win fairly comfortably, that demon should be put to bed. So whilst it's obviously not ideal and it's not home, they also benefit from the fact that lots of their players are used to playing at Wembley because of England as well, where England, whilst having a terrible record elsewhere, are very good at Wembley as well. So it's difficult, but you know, I think they're about 9-1 to win the league next season for that reason, and that seems like a big price to me.
Lump on each way.
Elsewhere, Southampton lost 1-0 to Stoke City, with Peter Crouch going to the stands to give his shirt away to a man in speedos. Do check that story out if you haven't seen it already. Leicester drew 1-1 with Bournemouth, as we've already said. That was the result that lost us our acca. Burnley lost 2-1 to West Ham at home. Their home record relinquished. Well, not quite, but you know, the hallmark of their season not quite ending in the style befitting the rest of their campaign. And Swansea won 2-1 at home against West Brom. Going around Europe now, Real Madrid secured their first La Liga title in 5 years. Zidane followed up on winning the Champions League last year with winning the league title. What's the secret to his success, George?
Ronaldo, I guess. I don't know. I mean, I've gone through this a lot over the last year, and I'm just, maybe he's just a great manager. He's just cultivated this team and this winning mentality there that is just so impressive. And his use of players just on paper always looks questionable, and it always just comes up trumps. I mean, the impact that Isco's had in the final 6 weeks of the season has been absolutely incredible. And whilst in my head I'm thinking, why is it taking him so long to play Isco? I suppose the actual way you've got to look at it is that he's called on a player when they needed someone to carry them over the line, and he's found them. It's just, I mean, I'll be really, really interested to see how he sets them up for the Juve game in the Champions League final, because it was a bit of a shock last year when, against Atleti, he basically played two banks of five, in effect. And
he put the emphasis on them and they couldn't hack it.
Exactly. So, and people said it was a bit of a fluke, that game, because Atleti dominated possession, whereas actually I think it was a bit of a tactical masterstroke.
It's not the first time either, in that Madrid derby in the league earlier this season, where he played Isco behind Ronaldo.
Yeah. Exactly. So he's obviously, I mean, he's pretty sharp, and I think that this game against Juve, against Allegri, and against a Juve team who are, you know, in my book, I think are the likely winners. It'll be really interesting to see how Zidane sets them up, and it'll be another insight into his kind of tactician's brain.
Mm-hmm. Elsewhere in Spain, Barcelona did beat Eibar 4-2 on the last day of the season. Unfortunately, Madrid's win over Malaga meant they still won the title. Barcelona have now announced that their new manager will be announced on May the 29th. Who do you reckon it could be, Jamie?
That's a tough one, really. I don't have the knowledge whether there's anyone within that can sort of make the step up.
I think Luis Enrique's assistant is Unzu. I'm not sure how to pronounce his name, but he's now tipped as a favourite by some to take over.
Yeah, so it could be him. I'm from elsewhere. I'm not. Titch have no idea.
Valverde seems to be the one that they're looking at elsewhere, but yeah. The fact they've set this date and would suggest to me that maybe it is going to be an appointment from within. We'll see.
Diego Simeone, however, is going nowhere. He has said that he's going to lead Atletico Madrid into their new stadium, which could also mean that Griezmann stays as well, because that seems to hinge on his future as well. Do you think that both will be there starting next season, George?
It's really hard to say. I think that a lot of that depends on Ajax against Manchester United. I think that if United do qualify for the Champions League, then they are going to try and move heaven and earth to sign Griezmann. And there's obviously some interest on his part. Otherwise, this story would not have rumbled on for the four or so months it has before the transfer window even opened. So,
well, it helps when his family are United fans.
Yeah, well, yeah. I'm sure they can be Barcelona fans next week as well or whatever. But with Griezmann, it seems like there is a price and there is an interest in leaving. So we'll see.
In Serie A, Juventus wrapped up the title with a 3-0 win over Crotone to become the first side to ever win the Italian league title 6 years in a row. Roma did try to keep up the pressure, though, with a 5-3 away win over Chievo. Plenty of goals elsewhere as well. Sassuolo won 6-2 over Cagliari. Napoli 4-1 over Fiorentina. It's a league that produced the latest winner of the Premier League in Antonio Conte. It's previously known for its defensive solidarity, but Italian football's kind of become a hothouse for goals in recent years, hasn't it, George? What's going on?
I think it's basically because there are lots of strong teams. I mean, we associate the Serie A of kind of 10, 15 years ago of being exceedingly strong with the two Milan clubs and Lazio have gone through a bit of a heyday, maybe 20 years ago. Whereas that's kind of slipped now, and it's always been the case for the last, until Juventus' kind of rejuvenation, that basically whoever was the one team who didn't screw it up would be the one who'd win. Whereas now, you know, you've got Napoli and you've got Roma.
All with interesting managers as well, doing interesting things.
It feels like, you know, after the financial difficulties and what was basically a bit of a turgid style of football, that era is over. And now there's an era of attacking young, interesting teams. And like so Sassuolo as well, who are a team who kind of came from nowhere and now play this incredible brand of attacking football. It's a really fun time to...
What's Italian for Bournemouth? Eh? Sorry, yeah, exactly. That's just...
I think we want a recommissioning of Football Italia.
Yeah.
Because that would be...
100%. You know. The Bundesliga, meanwhile, came to the... Well, it didn't, the end of the season didn't just come for Alonso Lahm and Tom Stark at Bayern Munich. Their careers did. They're going off into the sunset to retire with a 4-1 win over Freiburg. But the season is not over in Germany. They have a relegation playoff to contest. Wolfsburg will be the team to do it. People will remember 2 years ago they were the title contenders with Kevin De Bruyne as their chief source of inspiration. They've fallen on hard times, and Hamburg actually scored a late last minute winner to pip them to push the Wolves into the third relegation spot, and they will now face Eintracht Braunschweig in their little kind of their playoff to decide who makes it into the top flight for next season. Elsewhere, Cologne got into Europe for the first time in 25 years by finishing fifth after Hertha were thrashed 6-2 by Bayer Leverkusen. Elsewhere, obviously, the DFB Pokal Cup final to come with Dortmund and Eintracht Frankfurt. So plenty of interest still in German football.
I just love how, yeah, I mean, Anthony Modeste just firing someone. I mean, Blackburn fans will remember him very fondly, and he's only outscored by Aubameyang and Lewandowski this season in the Bundesliga.
And Sandro Wagner as well, your boy.
He's an absolute superb player.
Yeah. One to look out for the Confederations
Cup as
well.
Yeah, I don't want to talk too much about the Hoffenheim lads because they're mine, but it'd be interesting. I mean, there are a few of them where it'll be interesting to see where they end up. I mean,
mostly at Bayern, maybe.
that's the big issue. But I think this season has again, like Serie A, shown that the Bundesliga is definitely one to keep an eye on next year, because there are a lot of really interesting, fun things happening there.
And it's kind of turning as well. I know Rory Smith did a piece on where have the goals gone? But it's going in an interesting way. There's almost like a counterculture within German football where like the pressing is giving way to almost like an anti-pressing movement. So it'll be interesting to see how that tactically evolves in the seasons to come. In Ligue 1, Monaco finished their season with a flourish. They've already won the title, but they beat Rennes 3-2 away. PSG and Nice could only draw. Will this season go down as the year French football re-emerged as a power in Europe, Jamie, or will this be a high watermark for Ligue 1?
I think it will, if they keep if Monaco keep the team together, because PSG was still very impressive this season. If you take out that like freak second leg against Barcelona, and if they'd gone through then, it would have been a far more successful season, I think. But also Nice have been very impressive. Lyon were very good in the Europa League. So it's kind of turning into like a lot of, like the Premier League's now six teams at the top. This is turning into that. Whereas you had all those seasons with PSG. It's interesting to compare that to Serie A and the Bundesliga, where you've got sort of Juve have won the league six seasons in a row, which I think is the same as Celtic, which is, I mean, these teams need to get a proper, like a couple more wins and they'll be up there. But and Bayern Munich as well, they win it and then it's the rest.
The Liga, it just completely depends on whether or not PSG are the only team who can keep their best players, as you said, because you know if Monaco can keep their players, then we'll be set for a really exciting season next year. You have to expect that Nice are going to lose the majority of theirs, but
then they could be signing Ben Arfa back. Marseille have got Payet and they've got new owners. Lyon have got Memphis Depay. Marcelo Bielsa is going to Lille as well, so it could be the start of something.
Maybe. Well, let's hope so.
Toulouse as well, with all their young players.
Yeah, you know, it's been fairly boring for quite a long time, so let's hope that this, that this isn't just a one-off.
You don't share my optimism for French football, George.
No, I do. I think this has been great. I think, you know, it's just a case of hoping that it continues.
Fair enough. We're going to quickly fly through the Squawker BetBull Accumulator for the week ahead. Do join us on the BetBull app if you want to take part in Accumulator or challenges with your own. But looking ahead to the matches to come, this isn't just this week. We are going to touch on the Champions League final as well. So first match on our Accumulator is the Europa League final between Ajax and Manchester United. We've gone with both teams to score. Both teams have scored in every round of the Europa League knockout stages so far. Happy with that one, Jamie?
Yeah, I like that one. Because I can't see United not... they might go 1-0 up, but I think they'll probably... Because I've got this one down to go to extra time.
So. Ooh. Eric Bailly's not going to be able to play, is he? Because he's suspended. No. So question marks over who actually line up in defence for United. If you were to pick the team, who would you have at centre-back, George? Would you go for Tuan Zabi or Fosu Mensah or anyone like that?
No, I'd go for Jones this morning. I'm afraid. The sad fact is, this is the biggest game of United have had in about the last three seasons. So, no time for the youngsters here.
No. Going full on Mourinho.
Bang on.
Fair enough. And I mean, if you're looking for goal scorers, Dolberg and Rashford, two players to definitely look out for there. Or Martial or many of the other glittering players in Ajax's Arsenal as well. FA Cup final, we'll see Arsenal take on Chelsea, in case you haven't heard. And we're going with over 3.0 goals. Their previous meetings this season ended 3-0 and 3-1, and their semi-finals ended with Chelsea 4-2 over Spurs and Arsenal 2-1 over City. That's quite a high scoring final with 3.0 goals, but with the players on the pitch and with Koscielny not being able to play, what do you reckon, Jamie?
Yeah, definitely. I completely agree.
Chelsea aren't keeping many clean sheets either.
Maybe if Terry plays for one final, he's not going to play though. He's already had his guard of honour.
Imagine he comes off again. 26th minute.
I think I want to see that now. On the Champions League final, we've gone with Juventus. We haven't gone with Juventus versus Real Madrid. That's what the season has produced. But we've gone with Real Madrid to score against Juventus' very impressive defence. The first time they conceded in the knockout stages this season in Champions League was against Monaco. But Real Madrid have scored in every single La Liga game this season for the first time in 115 years. Incredible record. If anyone's going to score goals, it's going to be Ronaldo as well in the form he's in the Champions League. 10 goals already. Look out, Juventus. The other match we've got on our accumulator is the playoff final to decide who makes into the Premier League for next year. They'll have to wait at least a season for these sides to try and get into the Champions League. It's a Huddersfield versus Reading, and we've gone with Huddersfield to win that one. Huddersfield have created 1.78 more chances per 90 minutes this season than Yapstam's Reading and conceded 11 fewer goals than the Royals too. What do you reckon to that one, George?
Well, I mean, I've basically said since about September that Reading were going to fall away at some stage because their shot data is so poor. And,
could this be the stage?
And they just haven't, and it's starting to burn a hole in my pocket. So,
but you got Huddersfield as your kind of English version of Hoffenheim.
Yeah, I mean,
you,
so Huddersfield is absolutely tremendous, and the way they rallied after a difficult end of the season is very good. David Wagner is great to watch, but this Reading team are basically coached within an inch of their life, and it should be an interesting game. I think probably I'd say that a goal could win it, so I'd maybe look at going unders on the goals. But I mean, Huddersfield are the more likely winners in my book, but I just, I'm bored of getting against Reading.
And if podcast listeners want to find out more about the Football League, and the League One, League Two, and the Championship, where should they go?
Yeah, so I co-host a podcast called Not the Top 20, or NTT20 Pod on Twitter, which the guys at Squawker very kindly let us record here, and it's your place to come every week for stuff, Championship, League One, League Two, and www.ntt20.com for your blog.
We gave him the slot for the plug, and he's made the most of it. We enjoy that.
Right, yeah.
Enjoy that a lot. Other games for you to consider on your own accumulators. The Copa del Rey final takes place on May the 27th between Barcelona and Alaves. Luis Enrique looking to bow out with a win and another trophy to add to his collection. If you were going to put something on that one, what do you reckon, Jamie?
I'd probably go for Barcelona, but it'd be terrible odds.
Barcelona minus three?
Barcelona minus two, minus three.
I mean, Messi was sensational. In their 4-2 win against Eibar. They had to come back as well, because Eibar scored two goals against all expectations at the start of the match. Maybe something individual on the big man himself, maybe?
Yeah, but I'd get, if you have Messi to score, I don't think the odds
maybe put
be
a minus three handicap on Messi.
That'd be good. That'd be a nice one to see.
I'll have to check that one out. And in the DFB Pokal final on the same day, it's Dortmund versus Eintracht Frankfurt. What are you looking for in that match? Any hope for Frankfurt? They've really slipped away.
Yeah, they have. But I still do hold out hope for them, because I still think that this Dortmund team under Thomas Tuchel just has a really soft centre, and teams who get at them can easily overcome them.
So check that one out as well. That's all we've got time for today on the Squawker Talker podcast. Jamie, thank you very much for coming in once again. Anything that our listeners should be looking at this week on BetBull?
Just, I think it's good to get like the outrights, a massive outrights cup accumulator for this week. It's quite fun. There's so many cup finals coming up. It'll be quite a long tale to it, because you'll have to wait for all of them to be played. But next Saturday especially, there's, I think, four cup finals, so... check it out, get in the chat room, and let people tell you when to cash out, which seems to be happening a lot at the moment.
And get on the corners and shots.
Yes, get on the corners massively.
Great stuff. George, thank you so much for coming in.
Cheers, Greg. Thank you, man.
Anything else you want to be plugging? I mean, you've already got a fair whack in, but you're writing for lots of interesting places.
I'm doing bits and bobs. Did a couple of playoff previews for The Standard. Should be doing some more for them. But the season's kind of over now, so I'll come back on.
Look out for always coverage of the Confederations Cup when. Anyway, that's all we've got time for today. Thank you so much for tuning in and joining us for the whole season. We're going to be here all the way through the summer, commenting on the international tournaments, both in youth football and senior football, and all the other interesting things happening in the off-season, because football never stops. Football never, ever stops. So we'll still be here. Do join us again on Friday. I've been Greg Johnson, and thank you for joining us.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
You hear that? That's the sound of Pepsi Zero Sugar, the better tasting, more refreshing Zero Sugar Cola. Listen to that endless pour. Pure refreshment. If it sounds this good, just imagine how it tastes. Oh yeah, so good. Pepsi Zero Sugar. Let your taste decide.